Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon Media, creating what's next in content, advertising, and technology. With brands like Yahoo, HuffPost, and TechCrunch, Verizon Media transforms how people stay informed and entertained, communicate, and transact.
Hi, everyone. It's Zach Rogers again. I'm executive editor of Ad Exchanger. Good to be back with you. My guest in the studio today is Nicolas Bidon. Nicolas is the global CEO of Zaxis. He's responsible for kind of the overall company strategy and P&Ls across 47 markets. That's a big company. North America, Europe, Asia Pacific, Latin America, Middle East, Africa. He's also running Zaxis at a time of change in programmatic after the sort of complexity and Wild West mindsets of kind of the first decade of programmatic. Zaxis was a poster child for some of the innovation in programmatic.
Still is.
Zaxis has shifted its message to one of simplicity and accountability. And it now calls itself the Outcome Media Company. I look forward to talking with Nicolas about that. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Zach, and good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for coming. So a little on you personally before we talk about Zaxis. Where are you from originally?
So originally I'm from France, or France, as they say over here. And, I've had quite an international sort of background. I actually did my studying partly in the U.S., did a Master of Business over here, and then got my first job right after that in the U.S. So I ended up staying here for 7 years in different cities. I was in Chicago for a while, in Seattle, and kind of settled in Silicon Valley. So I stayed for 4 years in San Francisco during the sort of first wave of the internet boom, which was very exciting and very interesting. And then I ended up going back to Europe in London, where I'm now still based, working for software companies, then for media, in particular Yahoo, where I stayed for almost 5 years in a variety of regional European roles. And then from Yahoo, came to Zaxis, as I was quite excited with the ability to create and incubate something new. So very back to my startup roots from the US, but still within, a very big and very interesting group, which is WPP.
Okay, terrific. Great summation. Now, you came to Zaxis at a time when it was still small, but had a very bright future. There was sort of hyper growth there under the leadership of Brian Lesser, CEO at the time. And it was part of Group M.
That's correct, yes. Still is part of Group M.
Oh, is it? For some reason, I thought it had kind of broken out.
No, still part
of Group M. Okay,
yes, we
got it. Okay, good. First correction, hopefully the only correction in this podcast. But so how did you end up running it?
Yeah, as I said, it was, basically I had been at Yahoo for sort of 5 years in sort of regional leadership roles, so across all of Europe. And this role for me at first, since it was focused on the UK market alone, sounded like maybe a little bit of a step back. But what actually attracted me to it, as I said, is really the ability to own a P&L and to grow something. And, obviously, history has shown it wasn't the worst career change I've made.
But
that's what was really exciting, is the ability to have a lot of autonomy. And to really create the future of Zaxis in the UK, build a fantastic teams in that space, and innovate for our clients.
Okay, terrific. Great. So let's talk about Zaxis and what's different now.
Sure.
What's the sort of quick version, and then we'll drill down?
Sure. So I think the, you know, the quick version is when Zaxis was started, was very much around this concept of leveraging programmatic to help advertisers reach audiences. So I think, you know, our positioning at the time was the programmatic audience company. And I think if you fast forward to now, programmatic is, you know, more of a method, but it's becoming synonymous with digital. I think, you know, when I started in the UK about 6.5 years ago, programmatic was 12% of display. If you look at today, it's 80%. So I think programmatic and digital are becoming synonymous. Mm-hmm. And what we've also realized is, you know, what people want beyond just audience targeting is basically better outcomes, better results from their digital investments. Mm-hmm. So that's really the transformation we've been over the last 2 years. The mm-hmm. transformation we've been through is to leverage programmatic, to leverage our investment in technologies like AI and machine learning mm-hmm. to deliver results for clients.
Okay.
And so the new positioning around outcome media, which I think tries to reflect this increased focus on performance and audience and programmatic being just one of the means to deliver that, mm-hmm. But okay. also other ways to do so.
When you say outcomes, you're talking about a sale.
Yeah, so outcomes really, and I think that's important, outcomes needs to be defined by the advertisers.
Okay.
So of course, if you are, you know, if you have an e-commerce channel, to your point, that can be an actual sales, online conversions.
Could be a test drive.
Could be a test drive. It could be, you know, leads for your call centers.
An on-site search. Could be just a site visit. Things like that.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I would say that's pretty crude. And yeah. we are mm-hmm. trying to take our customers with us on this journey yeah. of moving them away from this sort of blunt measurements, like, you know, looking at CPCs or cost per lens yeah. to things that are more correlated to really the business outcomes they want to drive. Mm-hmm. And again, that varies very much client by client.
Right.
And I think what's interesting about this is it means that we've had to evolve, you know, our talent for them to be much more consultative, for them to be able to ask the right questions mm-hmm. and to really work with clients to show them the realm of the possible
right.
and then tailor, you know, the right outcome that we then optimize towards.
Okay. So I think that there's been a realization that the agency marketing services layer of this industry needs to move towards more performance-driven mm-hmm. compensation. It's going to be better for the brands in the long run. Certainly better for agencies, and that they can stop playing this game of moving like the headcount game. You know, you can focus on results.
Right.
So how do you get there? Because I mean, it's one thing to say we offer this. This is how we want to support you, client.
Sure.
But how do you convince them that this is the right way for them to allocate budget? And then do you work through the Group M agencies typically mm-hmm. so that you're embedded with their teams, or do the clients know Zaxis and have a direct relationship yep. with you as a brand?
That's probably three questions into one
yeah,
there.
Yeah, sorry.
But I don't know where to start.
I can ask them individually.
I'll start with, you know, your question about who our clients are.
Yeah.
So 80% of our clients actually are Group M's clients.
Okay.
And in that sense, we work hand in hand with agencies and client leads. You know, to help them get the most out of their programmatic and digital investments.
Yep.
And we have 20% of clients who are direct clients, either, you know, fully supported with an account team, or sometimes also for part of our offering, like Plista, our native advertising unit, leveraging self-serving platform and booking their own campaigns mm-hmm. into our systems. Mm-hmm. So, but I would say the vast majority of our clients are Group M clients. So that's the first answer to your question.
Okay, so if Mediacom is working with a CPG mm-hmm. client, this client may not know that Zaxis is kind of the intel inside yeah. on some of their
I think,
work.
You know, that has changed a lot. I yeah. think, and again, it's because of the importance of programmatic now versus where it was, you know, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. If you look again, 7 years ago, I would say for most clients, especially CPGs, digital was probably, you know, 10 to 20% of their overall marketing spend. Mm-hmm. And within that, you know, programmatic was, as I said, probably about, you know, 10, 12%. Mm-hmm. So if you make that ratio, that means that essentially, you know, we were touching something like, you know, 1 to 2% of the global mm-hmm. marketing budget. So not very much on the radar.
Okay.
So I would say clients didn't necessarily want to engage directly with us, and we're a little bit in the back office.
Got it.
Fast forward to today, programmatic is much more obviously important. As we said, it's 80% of our displays traded in countries like UK and US. And digital as a whole is a much bigger share of the pie. So I would say we're much more front and center. And as we also become more sophisticated in terms of how we can help clients leverage their own first-party data, that means those conversations need to be had directly with the clients. Mm-hmm. So most clients today absolutely knows Access, and we have direct relationship with them sometimes at the, you know, global CMO level, which again is something that was unthinkable mm-hmm. 6, 7 years ago when I started.
Okay. Great. And is that because you've proven your value, or is it because the CMOs are just getting smarter?
No, I think we've proven our value. And again, what we can do for them is of more importance to their overall success. And okay. therefore, you want to create that, you know, relationship, that trust, and, you know, innovate together.
Okay. And then to that question of how do you get the brand to want to pay you on a performance basis, on an mm-hmm. outcome basis?
Yeah, it's quite difficult. I mean, you would think that, you know, it's an easy sort of conversation to have. But I think part of the challenge we have is, you know, sometimes depending on the clients, it's very hard to really measure the attribution and the real role that right. a part of the media plan may have had in the conversion event.
They want to avoid a situation where the sales are up 5% for the quarter.
Exactly.
And Zaxis comes to them with their attribution report saying, hey, congratulations. Look at what we did for you.
Exactly.
And so pay up, you know, and, you know,
right.
That might be a great thing for them as long as they agree with your report.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you touch on something very important, Zach, which is, again, consumer journeys and attribution. And if I look at, you know, a big part of our clients tend to be auto manufacturers, for instance. And it's traditionally something they've always had a hard time is to link the impact of the various marketing channels they have all the way to sales, which often happens into a dealership and which is very hard to trace back to, you know, the various touch points within the consumer journey. So the way we've approached this with those clients is to work with them on what we called a custom outcome indicator. So it's essentially a digital measure where we agree upfront on the attribution and how that measure will be calculated, and then use this as our benchmark to, you know, optimize against, often using machine learning and artificial intelligence, and also to go back to that benchmarking exercise to really discuss about the value that we've been able to deliver for the client.
Yeah, it's tough though, isn't it? I think everything
it is difficult.
Things are even more in question now around attribution than they were 5 years ago, because I think there's a real feeling that Facebook is really good at demonstrating linking impressions to sales.
Yeah,
for example. But now they got so good at it that they get too much credit, in the sense that, like, okay, sure, they showed that a bunch of people who bought
Products
did see Facebook ads, but they're not tracking all the other impressions along the way.
Exactly.
They're not tracking out of home. And you're serving a combination of digital display and video, probably.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we do a lot of different programmatic channels.
That's like an unknowable fraction of the total customer journey.
That's correct. And so, and again, you take companies like Criteo have been very good, I think, on that last click attribution and having a click model. But again, you know, because they do a lot of retargeting, which tends to be toward the lower end of the consumer journey, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't take into account all the different ways with which you've been able to move the consumers down the funnel or down mm-hmm. the consumer journey, of course, you know, attribution and last click is going to look good. But if you only do that, you know, your prospecting strategies are going to dry up. You're not going to get new customers, and you're going to, you know, become very efficient at converting that last stage of the funnel, which most of our clients want a bigger impact throughout the journey.
Right. Okay. So from your kind of global point of view at Zaxis, have you, in your attribution models, have you downgraded the value of display in as an upper funnel influencer of consumer purchase decisions? Like, has gone by and this industry has gotten very good at gaming last click, in some cases with the best of intentions, it's often portrayed as like kind of a nefarious thing, like gaming the system. But sometimes you're just trying to get a good outcome, and so you end up serving the last impression right before the sale just because you know so much about that consumer.
Yeah.
Okay, but now we all are sensing maybe we've been giving too much credit to these
lower
funnel ad impressions.
I think you're absolutely right. I think overall as an industry we have. I think, you know, one point I want to make clear is we do not grade our own homework. So you're asking about, you know, how Zaxis is viewing attribution of, for instance, display or other formats. I mean, the reality is, you know, the agencies and the client agree on what the right attribution model is.
Right.
And then again, as an outcome media company, we work within that attribution model to deliver the best outcome we can for the client.
Mm.
But, you know, we don't grade our own homework because, to your point, that would be a little bit too too easy.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one thing I've seen is when it comes to attribution, you touch things that are very sometimes, how can I say that, where people feel very passionate about. So I remember, and I won't name the advertisers, but one of our early clients, a very big client, really didn't believe in digital. Mm-hmm. And the agency was, you know, their econometricians and all the sophisticated models that they had really, I think, put together a very solid framework to try to, you know, verify or deny the client's assumption about the role of digital. I saw the results. I think they were extremely convincing. They were presented to the CMO with me in the room. And, you know, the CMO still didn't buy it. It was like, no, your model is wrong. The way you calculate is wrong, et cetera. And he was, you know, he was a TV guy. And it was all about TV, TV, TV.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, again, back to your question about how receptive brands are to working on a more outcome and performance-based model. It's quite challenging because first off, agreeing with them on what's the right way to measure and therefore attribute value can be a long journey.
Mm. Yeah, right. So much of attribution still boils down to assigning what you think the value is to each
impression.
Exactly.
There's a bit of
a
confirmation bias.
Total confirmation bias, yes.
But we were like, hey, you tell us the rules of the game, we'll play by them and strive to deliver the best possible outcome.
Interesting.
Yeah. Saying that we don't want to be in the middle of that debate.
We're going to take a short break, hear from a sponsor. I'll be right back with Nicholas. Hi, it's Zach Rogers, and I'm back with Jeff Lucas, head of North American Sales and Global Client Solutions with our sponsor, Verizon Media. Jeff, what is Verizon Media's approach to transparency and control?
Verizon Media, we offer scaled, premium, professionally produced, brand-safe content. We're ranked number one by our users in a premium, non-UGC environment. We offer comprehensive ad fraud and brand safety solutions, offering a brand from a brand safety coalition of third-party players, leaders in the industry. Basically, we have Moat, DoubleVerify, IAS. Clients can choose the solution that best works for them. But we think it's very important.
Great. And so Verizon Media controls a pretty large supply chain. What does it include today?
Our supply chain includes the premium brand safe content. Advertisers have access to our exclusive inventory and unique supply of this, you know, professionally produced across Yahoo News, sports, entertainment, finance, homepage, and email. And also those great brands of HuffPo, TechCrunch, and Engadget, and Autoblog. 74% of our users come directly from one Verizon Media property to another. So once they're in, they find more and more content that they're very interested in.
And we hear a lot about 5G and its impacts, future impacts on advertising. From your point of view as a Verizon subsidiary, how will 5G affect the advertising space?
I think with 5G, the possibilities are endless. 5G is a quantum leap in wireless technology that will bring an era of radically new possibilities across all areas of tech. It's not just about a network. It's a new platform on which future innovation will be built. In addition to significant speed upgrades, which you hear about all the time, 5G will also bring 10x battery life, which is, you know, can always use, and also 1,000x larger data volume, more than anything that has come before. And Verizon is leading in real 5G. They were the first in the home, delivering real tangible value to advertisers. Backed by Verizon, Verizon Media is ideally positioned to help marketers understand and optimize their advertising in a 5G world. Last fall, we launched a state-of-the-art Riot Innovation Studio. Riot's our creative arm of Verizon Media, which will house a 5G lab and be located at Verizon Media's Playa Vista campus. It'll show clients how 5G impacts speed, video, interactive formats, and also how it applies to data and targeting. So advertisers and consumers are both excited about the launch of 5G. We can't wait.
Wonderful. Well, Jeff, thanks again. Thanks for your support.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I'm back with Nicholas Bidon from Zaxis. We've been talking about measuring outcomes and what a kind of Rorschach test attribution can be. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about some other changes at Zaxis over the years. How many people work for Zaxis?
Yeah, it's roughly 1,300, okay. Around 47 countries, as you mentioned in your intro.
Which are the biggest markets?
Biggest markets in terms of
total spend.
Total spend, yeah. And people is the U.S.
Okay.
And our second biggest market is China.
How close is it to the U.S.?
It's quite... It's getting there. It's the big, obviously, internal competition.
Is it going to surpass the U.S.?
Well, if the growth rates continue to be what they are, it definitely will. The question is just when.
Okay.
And, you know, I think China is a very interesting market because I was referring earlier to the fact that, you know, for most CPG clients, digital, you know, used to be something like 20-30% of their total marketing spend. Mm-hmm. In China, digital is more like 70% of the total spend. Mm-hmm. And it's growing extremely rapidly. They're, you know, well-known innovators when it comes to things like mobile and social commerce, payments as well. So every time I go there, which usually is about once a year at least, you know, I'm quite impressed by the level of innovation happening in the market. Mm-hmm. And when you're backed by, you know, a population which is 1.2 billion,
yeah,
and fast economic growth in the sort of like, you know, 5-10% range, it's no wonder that their growth rate is phenomenal.
Everybody's there. Everybody seems to be kind of concerned about the Chinese economy slowing down this year, next year.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to impact your business there? What happens in China when there's an economic crisis?
Yeah,
in the U.S., marketers pull back and they spend less. Well, it's same thing there?
Well, I haven't lived through this in my current role, so I cannot, you know, comment on that based on experience. But I think, you know, right now, again, we're seeing a very strong market.
Yeah.
I think one phenomenon which I find interesting as well is, you know, marketing in China used to be Chinese brands speaking with Chinese consumers. Mm. What we're seeing more and more is Chinese brands leveraging technology and programmatic stacks to reach out from China, you know, to consumers in markets across the world, including in the U.S. and Europe.
Okay.
And that's a very interesting trends as well, mm-hmm. as these Chinese brands become more well-known brand in their mm-hmm. own rights into the mm-hmm. Western, the mm-hmm. Western world, I would say.
Great. And then what's the revenue model these days? I realize it may be different client to client and different sure. market to market, but Zacks has pioneered a kind of intelligent but non-disclosed format.
Yep.
And I think Brian Lesser was very, your predecessor.
Sure.
Was very transparent about that, you know, and he didn't make apologies.
No.
For and, what and may I have been a right. miss, sort of, yeah, right, missing the transparency issue anyway, which has kind of blown up. So talk a little bit about disclosure of
sure.
media costs and data costs and technology costs and how you guys approach that.
Yep.
Here absolutely. In the U.S. and around the world.
Yeah, so we don't have two approach for the U.S. and around the world. Okay. So, you know, we're globally, I would say, consistent in our approach. And, you know, what we really realize is that, you know, clients are all different and want different things. And one of the big values we have at Zacks is client centricity. And because of that, we've evolved, you know, some of our models to offer different ways to tap into the expertise and the innovation that you get at Zacks. So what that means concretely is we still have, I would say, a model which is focused on our initial approach, which is, you know, an all bundled in solutions with transparent pricing. And again, increasingly, a very clear measurement of what the accountability is in terms of the outcome that you will deliver for that price. So I would say that's the natural evolution of our original business model.
So sorry, that's bundled with transparency.
So it's, no, we're transparent on the outcome price.
On the outcome.
So again, if we agree okay. that, you know, a cost per...
This is what you'll pay for a...
Correct. So we'll say cost per completed view or cost per conversion.
Or whatever.
Let's agree yeah. on a price. And then how we deliver that price is basically for us to, you know, take the risk and basically try to, you know, bundle all the costs of the tech platforms, the media, the right. people, et cetera.
That's the kind of classic
that's
Zacks.
The original model.
That's where Zacks came from.
Correct. And then if you look at the second part, you know, again, we realize that there's been concerns sometimes in terms of trying to understand if I spend $1, you know, in my marketing campaign, yeah. how much of that goes to publishers? So what we're starting to do for some of our clients is offer them a model where basically we have full transparency of the percentage of working media. So it's mm-hmm. a percentage of media model, which we agree with the
so
client.
That's negotiated client by client. And that's negotiated. You're going to know everything about the cost of media. And does that include cost of data and technology?
So that includes cost of media.
Okay.
But we're still going with basically then a bundle for the rest. So in terms of data cost, you know, platform cost, content verification, machine learning.
That's a single line item.
All so of it's
that
a single line
together.
Item.
Together. Okay.
Which is... which I think
is... They say the media costs.
But they see yeah. the media cost. And again, I think, you know, they realize that basically the vast majority of dollars spent make right. their way to the publisher, which frankly is what it should be. Because I think for all right. of us, we need a strong publisher ecosystem and we need to reward people who produce quality content.
Mm-hmm. So what's it been like going through that process of offering this option B?
Sure.
Over the years. Because I think there's been a rocky road. The ANA in the U.S. declared war on the agencies a few years ago.
Might be a bit extreme to say it like that. But
they put out this rebate report, this transparency report, and it was really, really beat up on the agencies. And I think a lot of people that I know and I regard highly feel that it maybe has gone a little overboard. But whatever, mm-hmm. we can set that aside.
Yep.
I think it did bring about change. And I'm curious your insider point of view on the change that it created. Has it been for the good overall? Did this something the industry needed to go through?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I think, again, it's refocused the discussion and certainly, you know, at Zacks, but I think overall in the industry about value, right? Mm-hmm. About first, what is the overall value marketers get from various channels, whether it's digital or programmatic, et cetera. Yeah. And within that, do we do a good job as an industry to share the value mm-hmm. and compensate, you know, the right people throughout the value chain? Mm-hmm. So I think it's definitely, you know, enabled the entire industry mm-hmm. to drive towards basically more understanding of that value chain mm-hmm. and also eliminating the bad actors from that value chain. Mm-hmm.
Do you think they have been eliminated?
I would say most of them. I mean, again, if I look at, you know, some of the industry initiatives around, you know, ads.txt, for instance, or just, again, how far content verification technologies have gone, you know, in the last few years.
So fraud and domain spoofing and all those
Absolutely.
Kind of...
Absolutely. All this kind of, frankly, fraudulent and you could say criminal uh-huh. part of the supply chains, I think, are being wiped out. I think there's still...
Have you seen a corresponding increase in performance of campaigns with that cleanup effort? Are campaigns performing better?
I think, you know, it's a complex, it's not yeah. a simple answer, because what that has meant is by reducing the pool of supply, you know, there's been price inflation on, right. on the quality media, as it should be.
Everything I came back say. To what it should have cost from the beginning.
That's right. Yeah. And I think, you know, we have to have a very honest dialogue with advertisers, because we still get, you know, briefs, for instance, to say, hey, you know, I want maximum reach and frequency on a video campaign across quality campaign, and I'm not quality inventory, and I'm not willing to pay more than, sure. you know, let's say $12. Well, the reality is that inventory doesn't exist. Right. And then when people say, no, it exists, I've looked into, you know, ad exchanges, et cetera, it's there. Well, again, when you take a deeper look to see what's behind that inventory,
yeah, it's not there.
You realize it's, you know, in banner video on some crappy website. And again, I think that all, you know, soul searching of the industry has enabled these more frank conversations mm-hmm. about, first, you get what you pay for. Mm-hmm. And two, you know, we need to continue as an industry to clean up that supply chain mm-hmm. and go back to things that deliver value.
Right.
And that's why, again, from a Zaxis perspective, the transformation over the last few years has been about clearly establishing that value with the client.
Right.
And then, you know, not compromising on brand safety, on quality of content, environment, et cetera,
right.
and delivering that value to the client. And I think that when you do that, you know, that trust gets reestablished mm-hmm. and it takes away a little bit the old conversations around transparency.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, there's also been a sense that the sort of adoption of programmatic by large brands has mm-hmm. been, it's been a game of kind of two steps forward, one step back. Like, they get excited about it, they make an investment, then they realize half that investment was wasted on bot traffic and low quality placements. And so they change their strategy. They'd make another push. And the next mistake they made might be, oh, turns out we were just over-targeting lookalikes and just reaching too many people who were going to convert anyway. Mm. So let's try again. And then the third mistake is around creative formats. Oops, we really cut TV too much. I'm kind of thinking of P&G here. So it's like there have been a lot of kind of false starts and resets from the brand marketer's perspective. And I haven't seen anyone just sort of throw in the towel and give up and say, screw this. This is just too complicated and messy. But there is a sense that, was this all worth it? I mean, there's a... I'm hearkening back to a recent episode that I think you may have heard. We were talking about it before we came on mic with Brian O'Kelly, former CEO of AppNexus. He's very critical of the programmatic industry, and he's questioning where really the value it's creating. This is a really big, big picture question, but...
Mm. No, I think
there's a trust issue, I think, with...
So I think there's a few things in what you say. I think, you know, the overall theme, I would say, from my perspective, is we've made this industry way too complex, mm-hmm. right? I think you mentioned what we're striving to do at Zaxis is to mm-hmm. go back to simplicity and accountability, right? And how can we simplify the environment, not dumbing down, right? Because we are experts. We have, again, 1,300 people who've been doing this for many, many years. So we know what we're doing. So let us help you, Mr. Client, deliver the potential you can get from programmatic, but in a simple sort of business model or a simple way. Because the reality is, again, it is incredibly complex. You know, we keep on inventing solutions to problems we've created in the first place. And, you know, I live and breathe this stuff every day. And even having done that for the last 6 years, I have to really make a conscious effort to stay on top of things because, you know, there's new acronyms, there's new technology, there's changes of exchanges mechanics, you know. And all of this, I think, to me, shows the value of actors in that ecosystem that can cut through the noise, I was going to say, to stay polite, and and really deliver value, which is what matters. And I think the potential is there, right, in terms of giving people tools that didn't exist before, that give them a lot of power when it comes to finding audiences at scale, when it comes to driving the kind of business outcome that they want. But again, there's so many pitfalls. It's so easy if you try to do this on your own or if you take the wrong advisor, you know, to actually waste some of your budgets. And that's why I'm quite bullish about the future of agencies or the future of companies like Zaxis. We can cut through the noise, cut through, you know, the latest gizmo or fad and really focus on delivering long-term value for clients.
Great, thank you. And for marketers who are trying to be their own advisors, you know, hiring people to run media in-house. What's your perspective on that trend? And have you felt it in your business?
Yeah, I think we have felt it. I mean, we've seen a couple of clients, interestingly, reaching out to us to actually give them some advice as to where they should start on that journey to in-house. And I think if you think about why do brands want to in-house, it comes down to control, right? Taking back control. And I think in particular, taking back control of their first-party data. I think brands are starting to realize that in a programmatic world, if you leverage your first-party data well, you can really create significant advantages to reduce your media costs and improve the efficiency of your media plan. But they don't want to take that data and put it into, you know, the walled garden and the Google and Facebook, and they want to keep that data close to them. And to do that, you know, that's often where they start on that in-housing journey. So I think, you know, for certain brands, it certainly makes sense to start making progress on that in-housing journey. And I even think that Zaxis will in the future introduce new services.
For the like in-house marketer?
For the in-house marketers, whether it's consulting services.
Do you guys go direct to client at this point?
Well, as I said, we have 20% of our business today that comes from direct clients. Got so it. We already have that.
Would you like to see that go up, that percentage?
Yeah, I absolutely, absolutely would. I think, you know, again, if you look at the strengths of companies like Google or Facebook is in the numbers of advertisers they have. You know, they have literally millions of advertisers. And that makes them quite oblivious, I would say, to big marketers pulling their spend out. I think, you know, agency business tends to be more focused on the top clients, which is great when you have them. But again, you know, we know clients pitch, lose agencies, change partners. So when that happens, if you're only dependent on these large clients, you're in trouble. I think we, from a Zaxis perspective, would love to, you know, continue to balance our business between this sort of marquee headlight clients via our Group M agency partners, and also maybe a smaller set of clients in terms of size that, again, will find other ways to service, whether it's self-serve or algorithmic trading and more automated way to deliver their campaigns.
Okay, great. A quick question on sort of the technology partners that you work with. And so in particular, I'm thinking of The Trade Desk, a little company that's worth, almost as much as WPP.
Is it? Well, is it really? No. I haven't checked their market cap.
It's valued at $9 billion.
Still a few billion short.
It's still a few billion short. But it's worth more than IPG. It's worth more than Roku. It's worth way more than the New York Times. And it's shocking, frankly. But fascinating. And I wonder what your thoughts are about what you're paying them and if it's too much.
What are we paying them? You mean in terms of the overall
the trade desk,
chain?
But also the other DSPs and the other tech partners out there. I mean, yeah, there's a tech cost.
There is a tech cost. But again, I think that tech cost is linked to real sort of cost, right? In terms of processing, you know, vast amount of data in real times. So there is, you know, I would say it's not...
You're good with the margins.
Based on nothing.
You're good with their margins being...
You know, I'm not going to say, hey, I'm super happy with what we're paying our technology partners in the sense that I always look for ways to deliver more value to our clients. And if we had to pay them less, we could potentially deliver even more value. But I think, you know, if you look at, again, the entire value chain, you know, I think they certainly play a key role into... that value chain, and I think their compensation to me doesn't sound out of whack, especially when you compare to some of the more maybe long tail publishers, which frankly, again, have massive ad clutter on their pages, deliver very clickbait-led type articles with short engagement, and are not the right, and still get probably of that $1 spent, you know, still will end up with 50 to 60%, if not more, of the total value that the marketer has spent. So in my opinion, there's more to be done for brands in the supply path optimization front and in carefully crafting their whitelists and the kind of you know, context in which they show their ads, rather than focusing on maybe, you know, DSP partners.
You give us another minute on the sort of auction, because it's changing.
Like, sure.
SPO, supply path optimization, has made it possible for brands to find the best, cheapest way to win an impression. And then you have the new kind of shift to first price. That's been going on for a while, but first price auctions. And then bid shading to try and control costs. There's still a lot of stuff going on in the auction. It's complicated.
Yeah. It's definitely complicated. And again, I, you know, back to my original comment on that, I do think as an industry, we are still way too fragmented and way too complicated. But I think it is consolidating and getting better. I think if you look at the ad exchanges, for instance, you know, that number is reducing. I think it will potentially reduce even further, which means there will be less needs for things like header biddings and you know, complexity in that front. But, you know, again, if I look at the progress we've made at Zaxis over the last 6 years in our supply path optimization efforts, and in also bringing to the fore the strengths of Group M, which was always in, you know, working with the largest and best publishers or broadcasters, and having direct relationship with them, where, you know, leveraging the entire sort of book of business to get the best rates for clients. I think, you know, there's a lot of people saying, hey, in programmatic, you lose that advantage. I think that's not true. I think, you know, you can create, again, curated marketplaces with direct-to-publisher relationship and, you know, best price and best quality of environment for brands.
All right. Terrific. We're going to leave it there. Nicholas.
All right.
Thank you so much for coming in.
No, thank you, Zach. I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to hearing it.
Yes, me too. And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in. If you like the podcast, I invite you to review it. It will make us easier to find for others who may not yet know about this program. We'll see you next week.
Tune in next week to hear more from Verizon Media. We help advertisers and publishers connect with their audiences through comprehensive solutions, not compromises. For more information, please visit verizonmedia.com. Produced by Bigfoot Music and Sound in New York City.